Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. Son Luke.
I'm Captain Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager. Captain Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager. Captain Captain.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys. Just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
It's a very special episode today because we are doing a Measure of a Man episode.
Yes. I meant to text you before we started recording. I don't think I've unpacked the box that has my challenge coins in it. I have a couple of Greatest Gen challenge coins to my name, but I don't have one close at hand.
Well, aren't you lucky that I have a desk set up replete with challenge coins?
Wow. I've always thought of you as being very replete, Adam.
I usually have a flat front desk. Mm-hmm. But lately, I've been going with a desk replete with challenge coins.
Oh, boy. It's a little bit more complicated to iron a desk like that. Is it worth it?
I'll take my desk to a dry cleaner in cases like these. Mm. Ben, I have so many coins on my desk. Don't tell any strangers. about the riches I have on my desk. I'm going to grab the Friendly Fire Challenge coin to flip.
Oh, boy. Wow. I didn't get one of those.
Oh, you better, Ben, because once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah. That's a podcast that used to exist but doesn't anymore.
Yeah, and I feel like this coin is perfect to create an argument between you and me. About whether or not something we're about to do is a good idea. So
I would push back on that lightly, in that the end of Friendly Fire was not an argument between the two of us. We knew what we had to do.
Oh, yeah. We were in complete agreement.
And then it was done to us without our consent.
Super fun memories, Ben. I'm just going to think of the good times.
Yeah.
All right, Ben, we've got Heads as the B-17 bomber. And for Tails, we have the catchphrase coined by you, to the victor go the spoiler alerts.
I think that you should just say one side of the coin is pro and one side is con, and you're going to flip it and it's going to assign my position.
We'll do it like that. All right, are you ready?
Yeah. Which one? So is the bomber is pro?
Bomber is pro.
Okay.
Screen is con.
Okay. That was a properly formatted coin flip.
I'm gonna take my hand from the top of my other hand.
Oh, the people watching the live stream are going crazy right now. They want to see what the result is.
You ready? it's heads.
So I am pro the cloud.
Of course you are.
And you are anti.
Yeah. Old man yells at the cloud.
Right? Oh, boy. I see you just popped a bottle. That looks like an agave spirit that you opened up.
Sure is, Ben. Something awful has happened in our household, and that is we're out of tequila.
Oh, boy. That's devastating.
So it's mezcal for me for the foreseeable until I order more tequila.
You and your wife have been drinking quite a few margs lately, I feel like.
Yeah, really taking those to the dome lately, as you do.
What mezcal are you taking to the dome in place of tequila today?
I've got a bottle of Tazba Dobala.
Wow.
I think this is a bottle that I got with you or from you, as most of my mezcals are.
It doesn't look familiar, but I believe you.
You gonna have a drink for this one?
Yeah, I've got a glass of hard cider here.
You wanted an agave spirit. Well, there it sits.
Let's get into it, Adam. It's season 1, episode 5. Great episode. The Cloud.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
This is the worst episode of Star Trek Voyager I've ever seen. I've only seen 5 of them. This is by far the worst.
Well, it's a real high watermark, in my opinion.
Captain Janeway opens with a personal log where she finally starts to come to grips with how her actions may have affected others in the workplace. It's taken 5 episodes, but we're finally here.
Yeah. It seems like she and the rest of the crew are kind of reaching the acceptance phase of the Kubler-Ross model of being stranded in the Delta Quadrant.
I mean, she's the boss walking around a workplace, and she's feeling a little hurt at what an outsider she is as the boss.
Heavy lies the crown, and this is her grappling with an issue that I feel like was very much present for Picard and maybe less so Sisko, which is that feeling of, like, if you are the commander of a ship, you have to be willing to send people to their deaths. You have a huge amount of responsibility, and there's a kind of advantage in maintaining a little distance in being larger than life. And I really love the like humility of a captain's log that features the editing process. We hear her delete a line.
I've never trusted Klingons, and I never will.
We should have the warp drive up and running by 0900 hours.
Computer, delete last sentence.
This is a feedlot owner not wanting to name their cows. She's looking all around at these pre-dead people.
That's all she sees when she looks around.
I know.
Dead blonde, dead redhead, dead brunette.
Before she goes and edits her own log, her conclusion goes something like, it may be time for her to change her ways for the benefit of the crew.
Yeah.
She might have to become cool.
This is something that even her crew are aware of. She walks into the mess hall and she and Tom Paris and Kim stand around like dunking on Neelix's cooking for a couple of minutes before she kind of takes her leave. And Harry Kim is like, oh, we should have asked her to sit with us. And Tom Paris is like, you fucking teacher's pet. What are you talking about? That's the captain. You don't ask the captain to sit down in the lunchroom.
Are they sitting side saddle?
They're doing a side sit.
They're doing a side sit, aren't they?
Yeah.
You're making too much about a side sit.
I don't know. If I'm the captain and I come into the mess hall and I see two employees side sitting, I don't know if that's a party I want to break up. I don't want to sit third in a side sit situation.
Well, it's very intimate.
Third in a side sit is awkward because often the side sitter has pulled their chair around to the side of the table. You know, it's usually a two-top right. that a side sit takes place at. So you're going to have to try and find another available chair, like look around the dining room, say like, are you expecting someone or can I take this?
There's a very fun composition here when Janeway walks off to the breakfast buffet in the background, and you get like a three shot here of like Kim and Paris, and then in the deep, deep background, there's Captain Janeway working the make your own waffle iron back there, pouring the batter, doing the business.
I love the idea that Neelix is terrible at cooking and that he's making everybody a little bit sick.
Do you think that the crew has been forcibly made vegetarian / vegan because of their need to conserve energy resources and they're just using hydroponic shit to eat?
It kind of seems that way, right? I mean,
they would have to.
They haven't like stopped at a planet and like killed a bunch of animals, have they?
No.
But remember when...
If you eat a shit apple, are you not vegan anymore?
That is technically a byproduct of a living creature, right?
Are shit apples kosher?
If the hosts of Star Trek and the Jews are listening, have Adam on. He has questions.
Mealtime is always interesting now that Neelix is in the kitchen.
They're having to conserve replicator resources with the making of food, but those replicators are working overdrive to reproduce Imodiums, which are just shooting out of the replicators at Starfleets before they clock in for their shifts.
Yeah, it's like hitting the jackpot on a slot machine. Janeway is poking around for a cup of coffee here in the mess hall and is having no luck finding any because they are out.
My culture finds that to be a reprehensible and entirely unacceptable act.
And she floats the idea to Neelix of using one of her replicator rations to make herself a cup of coffee, and he firmly shuts her down.
That would not be appropriate, Captain.
I don't have the freedom to kill you.
I love the tone of this in the context of the captain's log we just heard, where she's like thinking about trying to like be a little bit more down to earth and relatable with her crew. And then the second Neelix is a little bit out of line in terms of ship hierarchy.
She's used to getting her groceries from insert name of premium grocery store here.
Erewhon.
She's not about to go down to Ralph's or whatever.
Right.
For her produce.
Yeah.
This coffee that Neelix pours her is straight out of a Peltzer brand coffee maker. It is pretty gross stuff.
Yeah. If you like your coffee thick, go to Neelix's. It's kind of a Kanar level of thickness, right?
It is.
It looked like it may be the same like stunt material that they make Kanar out of.
What's the thickest coffee you've ever had?
I've had like Turkish coffee in
that's the best.
In like a Mediterranean restaurant where it's like it's almost like you're drinking like grounds that are suspended in water.
Yeah, it's incredible stuff.
Yeah. Ethiopian coffee is a lot like that.
The high you get off of a Turkish coffee. I'm still chasing that dragon. God, that shit fucking slaps.
Yeah. Ethiopian coffee is very similar to that and delicious.
Speaking of drinking,
yeah,
Ben, is Ensign Kim drinking his breakfast beverage from a metal julep cup like he's at the fucking Kentucky Derby? What is he doing?
I don't know. Those glasses definitely caught my eye. They do look like something that came from like the Pasadena flea market, not the space restaurant supply company.
I love the idea that Ensign Kim might just have a favorite cup, and that's what it is. He prefers to drink out of his julep cup at all times.
Do he and Tom not have the same type of cup? I didn't notice
that Paris was drinking out of the same vessel. This seemed like a very Kim specific thing, but
well,
I don't know. This is just the kind of minutiae that The Greatest Generation is all about.
Yeah. Star Trek Cup cast has officially begun.
This is a fun out from this scene because Chakotay radios Janeway, and before he even says anything about the reason for his message, Janeway's getting the fuck out.
Yeah. Saved by the bell. She dodges the bullet of the disgusting beverage that Neelix is trying to pour her and heads up to the bridge where she is informed that they're passing a nebula. This nebula has a lot of Omicron particles, and those could be used to supplement their failing energy systems and therefore increase the amount of replicator use that they can afford to do. So she's really excited about this. Very famous line here.
There's coffee in that nebula.
I love the potential here. You can turn Omicrons into coffee grounds or beans or whatever you use to make coffee. I'm still not sure how a person makes coffee.
This far into the pandemic and you're still not sure.
Breakfast is done at this point because Kim and Paris have arrived for their shift. And it's real sotto voce-like. Janeway asks Chakotay how the crew is. How they doing? They all right? I'm kind of hearing some whispers when I walk into and out of places.
This conversation goes on for a really long time.
It's incredible how long this moment is. And knowing what we know about the construction of the Chakotay character, there's probably a sincerity that one watches this episode with without having that prior knowledge that's like, wow, that's cool. Like, this is a type of person being represented. I don't know whether or not this is true or bullshit, but I'm willing to go along with it.
We talk to animals.
I think that that's why it's considered to be kind of harmful, is that most viewers are probably not going to verify the information that they're receiving here.
This is the scene that makes me certain that this is a terrible episode, and it's why I'm totally blown away that you think it's so good. How dare you, Ben?
I think this is a product of its time, and I think that art like this is important to revisit because it's something we can learn from. Like, not only is the stuff that they put
into Ducote's
mouth here,
I can't out virtue signal a virtue signaler. It's just not possible. You fucking judoed me into the ground.
But I do think that there is an element of condescension in the way that Janeway asks the questions also that kind of squicked me out.
Really? I didn't get the condescension. What I definitely got was like, Chakotay can't tell Janeway what his TM mantra is because that's something he paid thousands of dollars for.
It's a Native American tradition.
It seems like that kind of vibe. Like, I could tell you what your animal guide is, but, you know, you kind of have to pay me a sum of money or replicator rations to find that out.
There's a 3-day course that I teach and it's $500.
Right. And then at the very end, he offers to help her. And this is like, I think this is me creeping into my opinion of the episode. Like, I baseline distrust anyone who is so quick to teach me a thing about a thing. Like, I feel like Janeway's getting conned here.
The thing I kept wondering, I watching this episode really felt complicated about the amount of this C storyline there is, but I also just watched this scene and was like, if you were Paris or anybody else on the bridge and the captain and the commander were just whispering to each other for this long.
Fuck, I would hate that so much.
Wouldn't you just be going crazy?
It's happening behind Paris too, which is like the worst. Like, I already low key, if I hear anyone laugh in my presence and like, I think they're laughing at me in
that's
a bad way.
That's the automatic assumption.
Yeah.
and they are laughing. Like, they are having, like a very, like, joyful banter the way they're talking to each other.
Boy, we really got rid of the distrust between the Maquis and the Starfleets. Kind of suddenly, didn't we?
I mean, I think that it's probably there in the lower ranks for sure. But Chakotay and the captain love each other.
This feels downright flirtatious. To coast off of your description there, Ben. Like, I feel like Chakotay is making the case for the sea cucumber. You know, sea cucumbers are very omnivorous sexually.
It has great pocket time.
Not that your spirit animal defines who you are as a person. I'm just saying. Harry Kim, as they're flying into this nebula, gets dragged so hard by Tuvok. He's like, wow, what a cool nebula. Never seen one like this before. And Tuvok goes on radio. Like, he like side chats him on Slack
so
almost
much.
And says like, hey, Harry, try and keep a lid on being in awe of space and its beauty because it's going to freak out the junior officers. And my question to you is, Adam, who are the junior officers? Harry Kim is an ensign. Are there people of lower rank than that who are considered officers?
He's the juniorest officer there is. I mean, this episode is trash. The coin has told me so. But this scene is hilarious to me. I love, this is like site-to-site transport in some ways. Like the idea of using your communicator in the same scene is super fun.
I love the way they do it with the audio too. Like, it's not really commented on so much as just you can see what is happening based on the fact that they use a wide shot where Tuvok is deep in the background talking to Kim at a tone of voice that he would have to use if they were like standing right next to each other.
David Livingston directs this episode as he's directed 50 episodes of Star Trek, and this is such...
We're in good hands.
We're in great hands with him. It's such great blocking. There's also the appearance of a split diopter in the scene, which is like fucking greatest gen catnip. I love it.
So they scan this nebula. It's like, yeah, this is an unremarkable nebula, but it does have these Omicron particles in it.
When you get your nebula examined, you want it to come back unremarkable. What you don't want is, what is it? What is the ABC of nebula? Like, you don't want asymmetry.
Right.
You don't want blackish hue. You don't want convex.
Right.
Do not take medical advice from your Star Trek podcast.
Is that something to do with like moles or something?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to recall, but I don't have any of that recall.
Yeah, as a person that's got some moles and a dad who's had a few removed because they turned cancerous, I should probably know that stuff.
All right, the ABCDEs of moles are these, Ben. Are you ready? Asymmetrical shape, border, color, diameter, and evolving. So if you notice any of these changes, you need to schedule an appointment with your medical provider.
Yeah. I mean, I love this episode just for giving us that moment, Adam.
I think The Greatest Generation is known for a couple of things. One, being a terrible Star Trek podcast, replete with dick and fart jokes. The other is that we are known for giving viable medical advice.
Yeah, yeah. You can count on us. I would say that listening to The Greatest Generation is better than having a one-on-one consultation with a dermatologist.
That's right. And if you're looking at the live feed right now, it's exactly the same.
You can see that we have our shirts off and we are showing you our moles close up in the cameras.
All of my moles are asymmetrical.
Nothing our shields can't handle.
They penetrate an energy barrier and they just don't understand what they see on the other side. And Tuvok tells the captain he has no idea what they're looking at. And I love that Kim flips Tuvok's shit right back at him.
This episode establishes a quality to Star Trek that has been there the whole time, hiding in plain sight, which is, I don't know what that thing is. Let's go inside. Let's get inside that mystery.
Let's get all up in it.
Let's put our entire self inside it. And yeah. You don't realize it right now, like how destructive that way of being is in Star Trek. You don't get it until later, but that's their first instinct. Let's get in there.
It's a real bulldog in a bathtub.
So they go in, and the dust in there is getting pretty thick. It gets thick enough to resist their penetration, Ben. And I'm telling you, if your penetration has been thwarted by the thickness, I think you need to withdraw and consider maybe adding a lubricant of some kind.
Yeah, or this penetration being treated as like the all-important element of their space exploration is kind of a misnomer. I think that you can have a perfectly fun space exploration without penetration.
There's a moment here where like they're starting to penetrate to the extent that there are bangers being dropped on them that's slowing the depth of their penetration. And they cut to Paris here. Paris is stationed as a bench seat, doesn't it? Like from a classic car.
Yeah.
Because he's on one end of the station and he slides over and his slide is like 3 feet long.
Yeah, I think his seat must be on like a swivel or something, but I love the way
he's
the camera works.
He's not swiveling, Ben. He's sliding.
He's scooting?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
You can hear the vinyl squeak when he moves over.
It makes a fart noise and he says, no, that's the seat. That wasn't me. That was the seat.
You know, on the hot days on the bridge, you'd want to put a towel down at Paris's station just so your thighs don't. If you're wearing a scant and you sit down at Paris's station, your thighs will stick right to that vinyl. It's no good.
They push through this energy barrier and we cut down to the mess hall where Neelix is starting to express some real buyer's remorse about throwing in with these people, which I thought was so great. Like, I think that Neelix being afraid of being inside a nebula is a very funny character detail, but also the idea that like he would rethink his decision to go with over and over again was so realistic. Like, of course, every week this ship is in new danger. This is their fifth episode and their second death-defying nebula experience.
Neelix is making the case against Star Trek here. He would rather the show be about nothing.
Yeah, right. That's a case that our buddy Manu Saadia makes, that like in a utopian future, like it would be kind of a you'd have to be kind of a misfit to be in Starfleet, because your life would be so easy. Like, you could literally do whatever you want to be like the kind of person that wants to go get sucked into wormholes all the time and like live in constant danger.
Manu has a lot of opinions that I don't agree with.
But it is like, it is kind of like an antisocial choice that these people have made. And
you know,
Neelix is kind of more of a normal, I think.
That's super true. Like, how much greater is the distance the Voyager crew has traveled to end up here, you know, psychologically, than the decision to join Starfleet at all?
Right. This is a possible outcome of joining Starfleet that everybody has to be conscious of when they do it.
Anytime a Q snaps his fingers, you could be flung across space in a second, and you're never getting home.
Yeah, and space is rotten with Qs.
Kes kisses Neelix at the end of this scene, which may be the first instance of a public display of affection between them. Why does she do that?
She's trying to suck her lung back out of him, probably.
Let's put our lungs together. let's make a working respiratory system.
Yeah.
I think this is a scene meant to tell us, the viewer, that they're an item.
Yeah. It's interesting that it hasn't been spoken quite explicitly. I mean, like, Neelix was jealous of Kes in the previous episode, but I don't think that they came aboard as, like, husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend in you know, like, I don't think that we necessarily understood, like, what the terms of that relationship are, or if, you know, the terms of their relationship, like, would comport with something we understand, right?
I mean, having shared a respiratory system, they're now closer than friends. Closer than family. And Kes will let one of her lungs go.
Yeah.
And that is now your chair.
I'm just ruining my own show here.
You're going to be the one editing this and resenting every moment of it.
I feel like Neelix, with his choice of chef's hat, is like telling everyone how little he wants to be there and how little he should be taken seriously as a food service professional.
When I make a quesadilla, I use two different types of cheeses.
I mean, it's hard to take him this seriously because when we left the bridge, we are like trapped in this weird nebula that is not what we expected it to be. And when we cut back to the bridge, it's still like red alert, trying to escape from this nightmare scenario that we did not imagine we would find ourselves in. And the level of threat to the ship, just, it is so hard to like imagine writing a script where you get a plausible moment down on a lower deck where two people are just like, yeah, what do you think? Like, maybe we made a mistake coming with these guys.
I really love the visual language of this scene and how it telegraphs what happens later, because like at the time it's like, oh, these are like lava lamp globules outside the window. Isn't that interesting how they're kind of flying toward the ship? But this is like inner space shit. This is what blood cells look like.
Yeah.
When you're up close. Like, it's visually telling us everything we need to know that we find out later.
They came in here looking for energy, and now they realize they're going to have to burn energy to get out, and that the energy that they came here for is not as available and abundant as they had hoped. And that not only are they burning energy, but they also have to burn a photon, which they have, I think he says they have 38 photons and no way to rearm if they run out.
That statistic blew my mind. 38.
Yeah. 38, that's it.
That means everyone else who dies is just getting ground up into a slurry and then released out the back, right?
Do you think in season 7 they're like bearing down on a starship they've been chasing at some point, and Janeway gets on the view screen and is like, now in all this excitement, I kind of lost track. Have I shot 37 photon torpedoes or 38? So I guess I have to ask you one question. Do you feel lucky? Well, do ya, punk?
I love that there's like a low-level engineer on the ship tasked with turning Neelix's sterno into torpedo weaponry. Like, it's a real MacGruber situation. He's like trying to make explosives out of household materials. So they shoot one of these 38 torpedoes at the wall of this thing there inside and then chase it through.
Yeah.
And the plan works. They make it out. And at the end of the scene, Captain Janeway orders the shit scraped off the ship for Bolano Torres to study. If anyone could just go out there with a nice scraper and put some samples into some jars, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what it was that humbled every defense system on this ship.
I mean, that was kind of an amazing idea right there, right? Like that this was a nebula that left goo all over the ship.
You know, I got real like Tin Man vibes from this ep.
Tin Man.
And this was one of the moments where cutting to the exterior would have been really nice. All we see is inside out. We don't see outside in when it comes to these globules.
Do you know whether they're shooting models or doing renderings on this show?
The thing with renderings happened on Deep Space Nine in the very last seasons in like 97, 98, right? And this being 95, like, I think we're still using models.
It might have been too hard to like make an entire new Voyager model that's got goo all over it.
Yeah. Ben, would you like a sea story? Are you hungry for a sea story?
See, I had this as the B story and the Native American Vision Quest stuff as the sea.
Oh, no. I'm pushing the Chakotay story deeper underwater until the bubbles stop. The B story can breathe. The B story occurs between Paris and Kim. It occurs at Kim because he's woken up by Paris.
Yeah. Pretty creepy that Paris is able to get into Kim's room, something that Kim comments on, which I guess is something that has been fixed with Starfleet ships since the Enterprise D rolled off the assembly line.
It feels like a Sloan watches you jack off kind of situation here when Paris enters Kim's quarters.
I mean, if Kim jacks off with an eye mask on, that's pretty remarkable.
You're an eye mask man. You ever wear the mask when you jack it?
I don't think I would feel secure or comfortable doing that.
That's how you edge into that dangerous territory, mm-hmm. like where it's the danger that's the titillation, huh?
Well, you've famously never masturbated wearing headphones.
No. And yeah, that was a technology that you hipped me to. And now you have to.
Yeah, here in this pandemic world.
You were prepared for the pandemic masturbatorially.
I think that masturbating with headphones and an eye mask is basically the most dangerous thing I can possibly imagine.
That's the most dangerous game. Forget hunting human beings. They need to remake that movie with Ice-T.
Mm.
Today, he's not in the mood.
I would be pissed if my friend came over and I was already asleep in bed and was like, hey, come out and drink with me in a bar.
Here's the thing about this scene. Like, we're given so much runway that assumes a Paris and Kim friendship here that we're very easy to forgive the B&E that Paris did in order to get into Kim's quarters. But I think Kim could credibly be very upset by this, and he's just not.
Yeah.
He's just gentle.
He's an easygoing guy. I mean, I feel like something that we have both learned recently is that sometimes the person that steps over the line repeatedly steps over the line before you realize that is something that you're going to have to do something about.
Right. Kim may be the frog in the slowly boiling water, right?
Right.
He doesn't even know it yet. He could be the frog in the slowly boiling mother's womb, as it were, because he's dropping some science on Tom Paris about like how he sleeps with an eye mask because it reminds him of the womb. Is that why you wear an eye mask, Ben? Does that help you jack off? You can't get up over the top unless you think about being in your mother's womb. You sick fuck.
I have to hold
you
the
sick
thought.
Sick fuck, Larry.
I have to hold the thought of my being in my mother's womb and a guy from Section 31 sitting at the foot of my bed watching me simultaneously.
Here's a piece of greatest gen merch. We need to make we need to make Ceiling Cat, but instead of Ceiling Cat, it's Sloan.
We've got an online store. There's nothing stopping us.
Nothing stopping us at all. Let's do it. We'll make it a sticker.
A sticker that is designed to permanently adhere to the ceiling of your bedroom.
That's right. That way, your future masturbatory sessions will be replete with voyeurism.
Today, we're stripping off layers of old wallpaper, and we've discovered something kind of interesting. This sticker was sold Over 40 years ago, to fans of a terrible Star Trek podcast.
God, I hope this old is still on PBS 40 years from now.
I know. Oh, God.
I'm Robo Kevin O'Connor.
And I'm Cyborg Chop Silver. It's really the classic artificial intelligence lament. Who is this for?
It's for us.
Fuck it, Black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
So anyways, Tom Paris has programmed up himself a bar that he used to hang out in Marseille, France. I think it's Chez Sandrine. It's a right. pool bar. It kind of felt more like an English pub than a French bar to me.
That is so Benjamin R. Harrison as an observation.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, the design
actually,
of this
set. Actually, the color of the pool table felt is more English bar to me.
But, I mean, they'd be playing snooker if it was England, right? Like, it wouldn't be a pool table.
This is a sort of place that shoots their cider across the room.
I'm into it. I am drinking a French cider today.
Paris invites Kim into his hollow Jack Shack with a degree of comfort that I never could, because like as soon as they enter, Sandrine, the proprietor of Sandrine's, comes right up to him. Ricky, like, wait till you hear the story of Ricky, comes up to Paris. Like, there are women just throwing panties at Tom Paris, and Kim just has to watch.
It is an extremely horny environment. There's no way that this is not a sex program.
No, not at all. And Kim, right away, like from jump, not entirely comfortable here.
Try to get in the mood, huh?
Sorry.
To the extent that he does not want to drink a beverage that would intoxicate him, I think he knows, because this is like some sort of sex trap thing. He orders a tea, but very Christ-like, Tom Paris turns his tea into wine in kind of a version of Jesus magic.
So do hollow wines not, like, is it turn into nothing when it hits your lip? Because the problem at the beginning of this episode is they can't replicate coffee because it's too energetically intensive, but you can run the hologram.
This is one of the main reasons this episode sucks, is because if you're trying to conserve energy, what are you doing making billiard balls and hollow wine and the holodeck for, Tom Paris?
However, he does say it can't get you drunk because it's a hologram. So it must just be that, like, to make like physical matter that has permanence is a totally different thing than making a hologram.
Do you think there are people with eating disorders who go into the holodeck and eat hollow food and then leave after feeling the satisfaction of that kind of consumption?
I wonder, yeah.
That's got to be a Star Trek thing, right?
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, what it would do to your mind if you kept taking a sip of a glass and then didn't get any of the, like, refreshment or other qualities of having the drink flow into your belly. Like, would it cause, like, so much cognitive dissonance that you would hate it?
If you ate a whole bowl of linguine and clams and then you got up to leave the holodeck, would your breath not smell as soon as you left?
We've seen snowballs fly out of the holodeck and get people wet, but we've also seen hollow characters walk out of the holodeck and disappear.
There are still a number of continuity questions yet to answer here, and this episode does not answer them.
It doesn't need to answer them, Adam. It's an early season episode. They've got 7 seasons to worry about things like this.
So B'Elanna Torres has taken the scrapings from the exterior of the ship and put them into a kind of spinner machine from the movie Outbreak. And she does not like what she sees in this little test tube. She has to take it over to Six Bay to get condescended to by the doctor.
Yeah, the EMH is, you know, if his bedside manner is bad, his demeanor when conferring with a colleague is even worse. And he really stares down his nose at Bolana Torres, who has figured out some things but not other things about this sample.
I need a second opinion on this.
Who gave you the first opinion?
I gave it to myself.
And I feel like this scene also kind of leaves us in the dark, right? Like, there's a lot of technobabble that is unresolved until later.
Yeah, it's a real tease.
I like that about it.
Meanwhile, Chakotay meets with Janeway with his medicine bundle, which looks a little too much like a bifurcated Mogwai in his hands. It looks like the corpse of Gizmo.
Reminded me, we're calling this the F storyline.
Yeah, this is deep, deep, deep. You can click forward 30 a couple of times on this scene, I think.
Yeah, this scene went on way longer than I expected, and I think way longer than Janeway expected, too, right? Like, she's sitting there, like, working, and he's like, hey, so we're going to go on a vision quest now, and she's like, what? And he's like, yeah, come over here.
I love that Chakotay is like, we used to do psychedelics, but now we use crystals.
They have, like an ayahuasca device.
Yeah.
Place your hand on it, and concentrate on the stone.
I wonder about that. Like, so you're going to have the captain have a dissociative, hallucinatory experience, like, while you're kind of in a crisis? I guess it's not really a crisis, because they've escaped the nebula.
They should have carried forward this tension of Maquis versus Starfleet up to this point, because if this scene is imbued with any kind of, Chakotay wanted to be captain of the ship... How neat of a subtext would that be here?
Yeah,
he's drugging his captain.
She is, like, intellectually compromised for a moment and is building trust with her in a way that could feel, like, menacing or something.
Right. It's unfortunate that this episode chooses against tension in that way. This is a scene a lot like the scene before on the bridge, which is, like, is it interesting in any way, in the way that it's intending to be? I wonder how many more of these scenes we're going to get in the series ahead that unintentionally are going to crater otherwise good episodes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. How do we even talk about moments like this? Like, maybe the way to get around it is just to, like, treat him as he is to a human culture what a made-up alien species is, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't want to feel like we're letting them off the hook either. And that's the tension.
Can we treat Chakotay as an alien while still calling attention to the fucked upness of his character construction? I just don't know how we do that. And we're gonna get this episode after episode, I feel like.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. But I think the fact that it is tough is not our fault.
You know what? I'm pretty fucking tired of that theme in my life. TBH.
Yeah, this has been a year of that.
So Chakotay's like, look... I can't tell you what your animal guide is. I can't tell you what my animal guide is.
I don't want you to tell me what your animal guide is.
Your animal guide, I shouldn't understand. Your animal guide, I couldn't understand. Your animal guide, I wouldn't understand.
Your animal guide is a loner, a rebel.
So after touching the stone, Captain Janeway is transported to a scene... lit with nothing but CTO gels, where she's on a beach and she encounters a little gecko on the rock. She doesn't say there's a gecko there, but that's the first animal she sees, and that's the rule.
Yeah.
When you touch the rock and you go to a place, first animal is your animal guide.
It's so fucking obnoxious that it tries to sell her car insurance, too.
God, it's just inescapable.
I didn't expect a brand integration... in this episode.
You can't even enjoy a hang in your backyard anymore without a fucking plane flying over.
It's like, I would get your car insurance, but I'm pretty sure that 90% of my money would be going toward you advertising it at me more.
You know what? The line must be drawn here, Ben. I'll never do a Greatest Gen ad for Geico Insurance.
Wow.
Not going to happen.
I mean, they're not offering us ads, but we're also not taking them.
Yeah, forget that.
Come in.
This experience is interrupted by Torres ringing the doorbell.
Yeah.
And Chakotay covers up his stash like it's his fucking works.
He says that he's never showed it to anybody.
But Torres knows what this is because she's been on the same quest.
Yeah, she tried to kind of mimic the experience of the Klingons killing their gods by killing her own animal guide.
I think this would have been... a much better episode if Janeway wasn't doing this and Torres was.
Yeah,
that's, I want to see that.
That, yeah, don't tell us about the more exciting storyline we didn't get.
Yeah, yeah, that's not good storytelling.
So anyways, this nebula is not a nebula, it turns out. It's actually an animal, and they, when they punctured through that energy barrier, they were actually basically goring it, and it is now bleeding Omicron blood out into space.
It's a nebula man.
It is. And so they have a big McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
On the bridge, actually, where basically all hands on deck, including the doctor who's on FaceTime, and they're talking about the idea of kind of stitching up this hole that they made in the nebula, and they feel kind of honor-bound to do that. They didn't intend to injure this space creature, and now they've got to do space surgery.
I always love these compositions in TNG when you were like back behind the horseshoe at the science station or the engineering station and shooting back toward the bridge to give it that depth.
Yeah.
Bridge looks fucking enormous here.
It does.
The doctor on the screen in the background, it's super fun.
It seems like it's a smaller set than TNG, but it's, they shoot it on a wide-ass lens, so the doctor is like very far back in the frame, and there's at one point where he's like not getting paid attention to, and he's like waving his hands over his head. Very funny.
Any ideas how we could stimulate regeneration?
Lieutenant Torres has the answer.
So there's been a degree of chafing inside Nebula Man that, that requires... the re-entry of the ship, and this plan is presented and approved almost immediately. We're going back in to fix what we broke.
Yeah, some Starfleet-ass shit. So they start heading back in, and this is precisely what Neelix had hoped to avoid. And he, like, storms up to the bridge to give the captain a piece of his mind on this.
It's always been amazing how on Starfleet ships, anyone could just enter the bridge. It's not like when you go to like a fancy high-rise apartment or whatever, you can't just hit PH on the elevator and get there. Yeah, you need a key.
There's a key next to that button.
Right. But anyone like from Wesley Crusher all the way up to Neelix can enter the bridge of a Federation starship unchallenged.
Can we see the battle bridge?
No, I'm afraid not.
Yeah, Janeway really captains the hell out of him in a way that I found very satisfying.
Yeah,
he shouldn't be there. He shouldn't have been able to just walk into the ready room unannounced and start piping off at her the way he does. But the way she is like, she is shutting him down in the process of like being distracted by the real work she's actually paying attention to is great.
Janeway's like, if you don't like Star Trek, don't watch Star Trek. We can't just drop you off outside of Star Trek every time we have a Star Trek.
Yeah, this is Star Trek. If you don't like it, perhaps you would prefer Babylon 5 or Sequest DSV. But
those are your only choices. So they go back in, Ben.
Yeah.
And things are working this time until the Worf lightning starts zapping them. Like that initial moment of, hey, this feels pretty good, devolves into this is extremely painful and bad.
Yeah, the kind of like defense mechanisms of this creature, the white blood cells of the nebula attack the ship.
The kind of pain that merits a long bath almost immediately.
Yeah, so they get knocked out. They realize that anything they do thruster or impulse engine wise is really causing this thing to react badly against them. And they're now both further into the nebula, but also further away from the hole that they're trying to repair. And so they come up with this idea that there's these flows of Omicron particles running through the creature that seem to be like circulatory system analogous, and they can maybe kind of like float back to the point that they're trying to get to on one of these eddy currents.
Nebula Man has kind of a lazy river inside him that the ship could just coast on.
Chakotay is
nice.
Pumping up an inner tube for them.
It sounds very enjoyable.
Yeah. You get a six pack of freshable beers floating in the Omicron particles next to you.
You know the MGM Grand in Vegas has a lazy river as part of its pool?
No way.
It's fucking great, man.
Wow.
I miss Vegas so much. But like that's one aspect to it, is like a lazy river that takes 40 minutes to circumnavigate.
That's great. Next time we're in Star Trek Las Vegas, we should do like a Friends of DeSoto lazy river hang.
I cannot wait to blow up the spot at Star Trek Las Vegas, which is definitely not happening this year, even though they say it is. I mean, wouldn't you be very surprised?
I don't know what to think, man. I feel like I want to like have hope for the future, but I also don't want to have that hope dashed. I don't have undue hope.
I'm reading that Star Trek Las Vegas is set for August 11th through the 15th of this year. That seems, if I were betting.
Yeah, and you are a betting man.
That feels like the line of when people are probably going to start traveling again, August.
But like, I mean, like Vegas has been open this entire time too. So they may just be like, fuck it, we're doing it.
That is a trip I'm not going to decide on until August 1st. I'll say that. I'm not going to pre-book that. And I don't know if you're a convention, how you can, like, imagine being a convention company, putting this out on the map and going like, are you counting ticket sales right now? How could you possibly?
Who knows? I'm just hoping to have a haircut by then.
I've gone a year without a haircut. This is 1 year.
Wow.
What you're looking at.
Damn. Are you looking forward to it? Or are you committed to the longer hair look now?
It's a great question. I've never had hair this long.
Yeah.
Maybe I just get it cut professionally so that I have good looking long hair instead of this.
I think it looks pretty good long.
What's killing me right now is that it's just not long enough to ponytail. It's just not. Whenever I try, the danglies just fall into my eyes, so I just can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
It's too long to be short and too short to be long.
Well, I've got to get that platinum, get that robe enlargement here.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
To get that
platinum.
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Well, let's get back to this episode, one of the greatest episodes of Star Trek Voyager ever.
It's not good.
Aired.
I'll tell you what, our episode of Greatest Generation is 1,000 times better than this episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Hard disagree. There's never been an episode of The Greatest Generation that was anywhere near as good.
That's not part of the coin flip, Ben. You're not obligated to say that.
I'm not obligated. I don't get paid to say that. It's just what I believe.
There's an interesting moment here where, after they get zapped with the lightning, that Ensign Kim calls out the damage in the form of a damage report, and Chakotay kicks him right in the balls about this.
We seem to be in one piece.
I believe the optical data network is down, Ensign.
I'll get right on it.
Like, he botches the description of the damage,
yeah,
and then it is never referred to again. What is that about?
It was just a subtle moment. Like, I think that we know that Ensign Kim is kind of new to this, and he is, I mean, he's a senior officer, we've established in this episode, but he's also green. And I thought that that was just like a little character moment of, remember that this guy doesn't have a million reps the way some of these other characters do.
This is a moment that should have invited another sotto voce with Chakotay and Janeway, where Chakotay's like, did you get a fucking load of this guy? You tell me we don't have 10 fucking makewees on the lower decks that could do his fucking job?
This is also a part of the episode, the kind of moment between Act 2 and Act 3, where Neelix comes onto the bridge with some past appetizers.
I like this scene a lot in an episode that I hate.
I like the scene a lot, too, because it's one of the many things that typifies what a good episode it is, Adam.
Love a plated appetizer. Love the circulation of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he and Kes got trays and brought them up here. It looks like good stuff. The captain even tastes something, right?
Sometimes it's nice to have a snack during red alert.
Yeah,
you want to get the energy up.
You don't want your hypoglycemia kicking in a crisis situation.
The doc comes up with a plan. We've got to use Civil War medicine to fix Nebula Man, which involves sawing off part of the nebula and then burning the wound in order to heal it.
Yeah. So they try initially by just like shooting these beams that they've come up with at the rims of the hole, and that the hole is repairing itself, but slowly.
You're going to want to use an analgesic cream, I think.
And what they have to do is put the ship like right in between the two sides of the wound and like use the conductive properties of the power system to draw the Omicron particles toward each other. And so that's what they do. It's a bit of a dicey maneuver. Timing is everything. But they manage to suture this thing up and then get out of there just in time to avoid being chomped by the healing wound.
This is not a good effect scene. The placement of the Voyager in the hole. And I don't think enough is made of the danger of the ship being in the hole and closing the wound around itself.
Are you kidding? That like that's all they're calling out. Like that the rim of the thing is approaching at 500 kilometers a second, and the hull wasn't designed to take this. I thought that was great.
My criticism is about it being shot in profile, I think, as an effect scene. Like it's in profile and it's a wide shot.
Yeah.
Show me the proximity of the threat.
Show me proximity to the threat.
We're too far away from Nebula Man.
They do kind of get out of there before it feels dangerous. I will grant you that point.
But they do get out,
and it's kind of, I like, there's still like kind of a lot of episode left when they get out. I was surprised at this. You know, we were like at the 40-minute mark or something, and that was surprising to me because I was like, what else is there to do?
Oh, you remember that French / English pool hall storyline, Ben?
Yeah.
We got to go back there.
And that it's not just Harry and Tom this time. The captain comes. Chakotay's there. B'Elanna's there. Like the crew is hanging out together in this hollow bar. The captain gets hit on by a half French, half alien guy that wants to fuck her in a boat.
His felucha on the wharf.
She's a real good sport about this. Like,
tell you what, Worf had a felucha also. He'd fuck you with that.
God.
This is the classic thing that happens when too many of your work friends get word of your hobbies. They start showing up at your mm-hmm. places. They get to know you a little better than they should. It's dangerous, and they never cut to Paris here. You never see Paris embarrassment, which is what this scene should be constructed around.
I love that he's not embarrassed by this. Like, he's like, this is where I come to masturbate. Come on, everybody, come jack off with me. It's fun.
Commander Chakotay, your stick?
It's a sexual permissiveness that is incongruent with Star Trek in general.
I like that they're rewriting the rules here, though. Like the captain is not humiliated by this hollow character making a pass at her. Like, he is every bit the horny character that the female hollow characters are, and she likes it. She's like, that was cool, that was charming.
There's coffee in that French penis.
And she sits down at the card table with all of them and says, I should have done this a long time ago. And they're like, what do you mean, like 5 episodes ago?
Yeah, and that's the series finale of Star Trek Voyager. It's incredible. I mean, it might as well have been that abrupt, Ben, because Janeway turns into a real pool hall sandbagger, no looking balls into the side pocket, the most difficult pocket to sink, the side, clearly.
Yeah.
The logged credits here felt really strange to me.
Yeah, very tacked on, like, hey, remember that very regrettable C storyline? Well, we're going to remind you of it. That's the taste we're going to leave in your mouth.
Yeah, it's just a little diversion, Captain.
I think cutting from a scene to the exterior mid-log and then ending it almost without punctuation, why not just end the show in the pool hall and then cut to exterior without the voiceover? I just don't see what its purpose was.
I think that's a good edit by you, but I'm not even going to let that moment mess up my enjoyment of what is otherwise a nearly perfect episode of Star Trek.
Hey, Star Trek Voyager, you fucked up, and I got notes.
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullets, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
Well, Adam, I think everybody knows that I loved this episode and you hated it. So
yeah.
What do you say we move right into Priority One messages?
That's just a co-host helping out his editor right there. Good choice by you.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It's from Heath, and it's to Adam and Ben. And the message goes like this. You two chase Monday blues straight to where Kevin sent the hoosnock. Thank you. I've been viewing former episodes and ran across an impression I'm simply desperate to hear again. Adam, would you make me the happiest man in the world and do me the honor of dusting off your Mark Twain?
Oh, no.
Doesn't have to be now. Surprise us. And more importantly, Ben. Well, Heath.
No.
This is an impression.
Now. He said not now.
That I'm very happy to provide.
Oh, God.
Though I may not have an entire episode to do such an impression, I am very happy to provide you with one here.
Akuchi Moya, though I am far from comedy, may comedy return to me.
Heath. I'm happy to give you the impression you desired so much and bought and paid for. I'm nothing if not a jukebox for your pleasure.
Adam, we have another Priority One message here. It's from Jacob, and it is also to Adam and Ben. Goes like this. I meant to do this a while ago when I powered through the backlog, but got distracted by the friendly fire backlog. And since I already gave Roderick money, I figured I'd float a bit more your way. Keep up the great work. P.S. I got some wild looks wearing that warrior shirt.
How about that?
That's a...
money flowing our way.
Thank you for supporting the show, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob.
I'm guessing you sent this before the end of Friendly Fire, and that does seem like a awkwardness that will haunt us for a little bit of time here, but we really appreciate the support.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. If you want to get in on this support of the greatest generation, take it on over to MaximumFun.org/join. The word join being the operative word. You get to join with other friends of DeSoto in supporting the ongoing production of The Greatest Generation and The Greatest Discovery, two of the best Star Trek podcasts out there.
Indeed. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Easiest Shimoda I've ever found.
Wow.
When Neelix and Kes show up with the hors d'oeuvres on the bridge, the first officer to take a food sample off the plate is my Shimoda. It's fucking great. It's a couple of officers in those back stations doing the anonymous work of a back station.
Those must be the junior officers.
They turn right around and they get some snacks.
Get those snacks.
I love that they get the snacks before receiving approval from their commanding officer for that. You get my drunk Shimoda.
I love it. My drunk Shimoda is Tuvok for his double standard that gets flipped back in his face by Harry Kim.
Yeah.
Apparently you're not allowed to say that something is amazing to you unless you're saying it in a dour Tuvok-y way. And I loved that.
That's some bullshit.
I loved especially Garrett Wong's performance when he saw Tuvok doing that and was like, oh, I gotta get right back at him. It was great. Yeah. Tuvok's my drunk Shimoda.
I mean, that's the most fun type of comeback is using their bullshit against them.
It rules.
It feels so fucking good.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Well, Adam, you know what else feels good is going over to the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker, and playing our board game. Do you want to head there now while I tell you about the next episode of Star Trek Voyager?
I can do that.
Please do, because the next episode is Season 1, Episode 6, Eye of the Needle. The discovery of a wormhole in deep space raises the crew's hopes of finding a shortcut home.
This is a version of Star Trek that is just about pressing your ship into something. Just pushing it right in. Seeing what happens.
There are so many holes in the D-Quad, and we're going to go in every single one of them.
It's incredible. I'm enjoying getting back to going on Starship adventures, Ben.
Yeah.
Just as I am excited to see where our runabout ends up, we are pretty high up on the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker. Square 87 is where we are at the moment, thanks to you hitting a Janeway square on the board. A few squares ahead is the Traveler square, and a couple of squares ahead of that is a Neelix's Galley episode where we drink a Talaxian champagne. So
the Traveler moves us five spaces forward too. So that's like we could hit two jumps in two episodes.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Danger abounds, Ben. And we're going to see what my roll does about that.
Yeah.
Ben, I have rolled a 3. Which has hit the Traveler episode and catapulted us five spaces forward off of that. So we're now on square 95.
Wow.
Which is a roll of a 5 away from a Mournhammered episode.
God damn.
Which would be really starting Voyager off with a bang.
Yeah, that is shocking. We've hit stuff like almost every single roll on Voyager so far.
I like that there's so much danger in the Voyager version of The Greatest Generation. It's good.
Yeah, the game is good. Well, Adam, I'm looking forward to that episode, and I am also Looking forward to hanging out online with all the friends of DeSoto this week. Of course, people use the hashtag GreatestJen on Twitter. They've joined Miriam Facebook groups. There's a Discord now, drunkshimoda.com.
Yeah, it's a real website, Jerry.
There's a Reddit sub, which is really active and fun. And, you know, one of the rare non-toxic parts of Reddit. It's just there's just tons of fun stuff to get into online if you want to pal around with other friends of DeSoto.
The music that you're hearing was made by Dark Materia, but the rest of the music that you hear on The Greatest Generation is made by the great Adam Ragusea, who, with every series of Star Trek, has created custom theme and interstitial music for us. He's just one of the greats. He does that while at the same time making a chicken parmesan or a delicious fried chicken or a chicken milanese.
And it's not just chicken.
I promise there's more than just chicken recipes on his YouTube channel. It's really great. Head on over there and subscribe to it.
Yeah.
Until there's anything good on The Greatest Gen YouTube, subscribe to the Goose's YouTube channel.
I mean, subscribe to our YouTube channel for sure. And subscribe also to our social media accounts. We've got ones on Instagram and Twitter run by the card daddy Bill Tilly, who puts up the hilarious comedy trading cards he makes about every episode of the show on those accounts, but also, you know, makes all kinds of fun posts throughout the week. And they are very enjoyable follows. You will enjoy them, I promise.
Yeah, this isn't some bullshit that's going to send you emails every day about the posts. It's not going to spam you with a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
It's great. You're not going to regret following The Greatest Gen family of social media accounts.
No regrets. But all that being said, we are going to leave you here and come back next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that is very tempted by yet another hole.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.